since there's only two of you, I feel like we could probably be pretty lax in terms of formalities. If you the biggest news that's happened since the last meeting is some of you may have seen that Jason was appointed planning and urban development director for the city of Akron. I was appointed as the interim AMATS director. Things are going to stay mostly the same for at least for everybody involved, especially in the short term. But I think it's, one of the things that we're starting to look at or that we're focusing on right now is development of our plan and getting all this stuff ready. And so what you're going to see from kind of everything that we're talking about now, other than the funding itself, is sort of trying to build all the work products and getting them ready so that we'll have a nice set of recommendations for the long-range plan. So I don't know if there is any questions before we hit like the actual agenda items, or if you guys have any issues, or that's about it. So I guess the first thing that we want to talk about was the funding recommendations, and these came to the Technical Advisory Committee this afternoon. They were approved. They are in your packet under, what is the attachment?
6A.
And really, these projects basically throughout our whole funding policy, we did a funding policy update in September, asked for applications in October, have been scoring them, met with our TAC TIP subcommittee to confirm the scoring, and then at this point now are making recommendations. And so the three programs that we recommended on were STP program, the TAP program, and then our resurfacing program. So the first, if you look at table one, you get a sense of the number of projects that were applied for. 32 projects totaling $94 million. Unfortunately, we had about $13.3 million available. And the way the scoring shook out was those top seven before the break were recommended for funding. With the last project, the Green Massillon Road roundabout, we're only funding right away because we didn't have any additional funds to put towards the construction. So the City of Green took just the right-of-way money to work on that project. And the TAP projects, we were able to fund the first five. We had about $2.1 million available. We had over $9 million applied for. What you'll see is Kent, Portage Hike and Bike, Brady's Leap, which is basically going to connect Main Street to almost Fairchild, and it'll connect the Freedom Trail to the Portage Trail up through the city, down to the Main Street in Kent. So that's, a good project. We're also putting in sidewalks in Montrose on the north side of State Route 18. This is the second project. We're also funding part of the towpath trail connector, the Magic Mile project in Barberton, which we had a Connecting Communities Planning Grant for and kind of developed that Magic Mile idea. Then sidewalks on Britton Road. I'm sure many of you have read about Chapel Hill and some of the struggles there, but think that this is an improvement that still is necessary regardless of Macy's. And then five, I think probably the project that has the most regional significance is the Freedom Trail Portage Trail connector. And so this is right now when you get to the edge of the Freedom Trail to connect to the Portage, you hit Middlebury and you've got to ride up a bridge and then I think jaywalk across the street, go down a gravel pathway to connect to the Portage. This is going to be a phase where it's going to actually build a bridge, in another bridge that's a bicycle only across, and then connect up to the Portage that way. So it's going to be a safe, smooth connection that will also then tie into the bike and hike that's coming in from the north. So it'll be the bike and hike and the Freedom will connect, and then over to the Portage.
Where's the bike and hike going to connect?
They're gonna. I think they have to build another bridge, don't they?
Yeah, and I think this phase.
This phase won't connect that piece, but...
No. Yeah, I mean, there'll be like one bridge that'll almost parallel the existing Middlebury Road Bridge to get crossed. And I think they can go under the underpass heading east, like to connect into Kent. But they'll have to have another bridge across...
The river.
The river, yeah. And it's about... I don't know. It's probably a little over about a quarter mile. Maybe it's even a little more than that than to actually get to the...
Freedom Trail to the Bike and Hike?
Mm-hmm. It's not super far.
No, it's not if you go the road, but I didn't know there was a connection between the trails.
There's not anything now. It's just
like
all
woods.
Yeah,
that's what they're going to hopefully...
Yeah. No, I think that's a $6 million project overall. We give them $700,000. So I think depending on what other funding they can do, like depending if they'll just do like the across the railroad and then heading to Kent first and then try to get funding for kind of the connecting to the hike and bike second. I think it just depends on funding.
Isn't that old rail right away? There's an old bridge there already?
But they weren't going to use that. They're going to put their own. They're never going to cross over the railroad. I
can't picture where the old bridge is, but...
You know, I'm trying to zoom in on it on my little map here.
Yeah, and then it has to be extra tall so they can accommodate, you know, the double stack trains and... But, I mean, that's a pretty...
That's
I did hear that in the meantime, they're going to at least try to increase the signage between the two of them and potentially even... stripe the bike lane on the shoulder to at least give, you know, the next 5 years before the project, like some sort of,
Yeah, so the Bike and Hike is on the north side of the Cuyahoga River, and the Freedom Trail's on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, it's probably closer to a half a mile where they're going to make that connection.
There's streets in there, and I understand that. They do streets now. But I didn't know where they're going to go with the rest of them. What is the Barberton, the Magic Mile? Where is that connecting from now?
So it's going to start at the Towpath Trail.
Which,
you know, they
right
built that bridge.
Right.
So that, then the next piece is taking it up over Robinson and to downtown. So basically what they're looks like they're planning on doing is building basically a separated... bike trail
rather than using the sidewalk.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So and that'll take us up to I think the light at 4th Street, which then on the other side there's a parking lot and they're reorganizing the parking lot and then putting the trail in the saved space and out of the right of way there. And eventually, and one of the things that's critical about this is that, you know, they want to do that Metro Parks wants to do a Pigeon Creek, Wolf Creek hole, like connecting from almost Fairlawn, Copley all the way down. And this would actually be then connected into that. So it would be, it's kind of the first stage to getting that trail, and you'll have that connection to the towpath, which I think is good. So that's, I think that's a cool project too. Sadly, I mean, if you look at some of the projects that weren't funded, I think there were a lot of good projects there too that, you know, there were a couple of good ones. You know, the Hudson, where is it?
14.
The Veterans Trail, yeah, 14. You know, we have given them $500,000 for that phase one already. And, you know, since we had redone the scoring, it didn't score quite as well. And but I think that project's still going to move forward. So at least from that perspective, there wasn't a huge loss.
What hurt the North Main Street project with the complete streets? Just curious. Obviously, it's not much off from the Metro Parks project, but...
Then I'm trying to remember how the scoring played out on that project.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, so they got points, you know, depending on what it was connecting to on either side. You know, so it definitely had, like, bike lanes and sidewalks that it was connecting to and from. It didn't get points for, you know, being a connecting communities planning grant, or it got, there were about five plans. Like, if it was a safe routes, a connecting communities plan, it had a history of bike or ped crashes.
It was identified on our plan
specifically. It got extra points. So a lot of, like the Bath and Copley and the Barberton, those are both connecting communities grants, so those got extra points.
Gotcha. I figured with all the project over the summer, the temporary pop-up, that would be a definite
I mean, that definitely, I think, gave a lot of attention. But I think looking at the project in general, not that, I mean, that would be a great project, but it didn't quite have as many of the elements that other ones did.
Yeah, one of the big issues there, too, or one of the things that we struggle with staff-wise is just a lot of that stuff is already there on North Main Street, the sidewalks. You know, like, the real complete street is the narrowing of the road and adding bike lanes. So in some of these Akron projects, like with the Safe Routes with Vern Odom, you know, the sidewalks are already there, so we're like, well, are we paying for the signals for the pedestrian, you know, for the ped heads, or are we paying? And so there was just, you know, and then also that one specifically tied into an STP project for North Main Street, which wasn't getting funded, and then it was like, well, are these two projects, you know? So there was some, and then the other thing that we did is that we assumed with when we had a usage, and we didn't want to, you know, we didn't want to like parse out points, but what we did was sort of like, if it's a regional trail, it's getting high usage and it's getting 15 points. If it's a busy area that's an urban, you know, sidewalk, it gets 10, and we think it's like a medium usage. And then if it's a residential sidewalk, less usage is getting low. So the ones that were kind of more regional trails got a higher usage, and that's just based on counts and numbers that we have that we kind of scored them that way. So
okay, I'm just curious, Barry, that would have the most impact on the population would be affected by that.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the trail, but that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are good. I think the trails still have by far the highest number of people on it. I mean, even with, I think, that area getting a lot of extra additional people.
Resurfacing, we had about $3.8 million. We were able to fund the first seven projects, two in New Franklin, two in Summit County, two in Barberton, and one in Cuyahoga Falls. And these are all simple resurfacing projects. But in this case, I don't even think, oh yeah, if you turn the page, we had 56 applications for, you know, $27 million of our own funding with $3.8 available. So, you know, we were able to fund a little more than 10%. I think it shows the need, you know, that we're faced with. And, you know, a lot of these projects are good projects. They just, you know, if you're number seven on the list or number eight, you're not getting funded. So that's a little bit unfortunate. But overall, you know, one of the things that we're talking to our committees about now is, and we're going to talk to our policy committee next week, is we don't really want to rehash the scoring or, you know, argue the points or change the rules, but I think having that discussion of, okay, you know, when you look at these projects, are these the most regionally significant projects that we can fund? Is our funding policy doing what we expect it to do? And hopefully have some discussions with them in the future about, you know, how successful that is or how appropriate that is to, you know, should we look at changing certain elements of the funding policy? You're late for class.
Joel. That's the highway system.
We were just discussing that.
Yeah. So, I don't know, do you guys have any questions, any other questions on that?
Is there any chance you're going to get more money up this year or something will be rearranged?
No, not really. But I think it's attachment 6B.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we were talking about with the FAST Act being approved, which is the new highway bill, is that it looks like we might get some more funding. But the reality is that we're not sure if when ODOT, you know, does its bean counting, will we really see it? And one of the things that I think I would like us to do a little bit more of is advocating for more of that funding. You know, the state has a lot of discretionary ability that we don't see. And a lot of that doesn't end up in urban Ohio. It ends up in rural Ohio. And, you know, I would prefer for it to be spent in urban Ohio. So, you know, one of the things we're talking about when I've been meeting with some members is, you know, really trying to advocate and write some stuff to ODOT to try to get more funding for urban projects, because one of the things we're even seeing in when we look at pavement conditions and things like that, the state system is maintained, you know, at, you know, almost 100% better than the local system is. You know, and they, and part of that, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons that go into that, but, you know, they have taken a very much of the approach of, like, we make sure the state routes are maintained. When in reality, some DOTs look at, you know, urban areas like in Akron as part of their responsibility, and our DOT's never really done that. So I think there's some things that, you know, we'll try to push, but am I overly optimistic? Not really, you know. More likely to get like $1 million from the grant or from the Knight Foundation to build a bike lane than we are from ODOT. So, yeah.
Has that been tried?
You know, I've pushed that idea before, and you know, we've worked with Kyle Kudachief a little bit from the Knight Foundation, but most of the foundations we talked to seem to not want to fund infrastructure. You know, that type of infrastructure. It seems to be they like to do the programs and the, you know, all that kind of the fluffy stuff, but less. Although they did let us spend $5,000 to build bike racks for downtown Akron, so it's a slow process. But
creative way to get new funding.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Helms.
Okay, obviously I have 2 minutes late, but my subject was, I guess, what you're at right now, and maybe if it's duplicated, tell me. But City of Green,
yes,
is actually applying for 2 projects, or advanced projects.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting 4 big circles in our, quote, downtown.
Roundabouts.
Yes, roundabouts. And the question that I asked them was, what are they doing with bicycles? It hasn't been planned yet. It's only in the funding stage.
Yeah.
But that they are absolutely, I says, well, this is an issue to handle an expressway entrance, which is basically closed down for only 20 minutes that I know of, and I just left it this evening. But that, why can't we put a bicycle route around this whole intersection, make it totally independent? And their reply was that any monies they use have to be actually attached to that project. So they can't put a like they do with the expressways. You know, you put an outer ring around the city. Mm-hmm. They can't do that, put an outer bicycle lane or pedestrian lane around this intersection because it won't be attached to the projects. They won't be able to get any funding for that. And I thought, so we're trying to promote goat trails, or what do you want to call them?
Goat paths.
But at the same time, those aren't eligible for funding if they're not attached to the official network of roads that are eligible for funding. Was that something that was just brought up? I hope I didn't repeat that.
No. There's no duplication there. Yeah, so Green did get funding from us for the Maslin Road, Corporate Square, Phase 2 roundabouts. We're funding them for the right-of-way phase of that project. Now, what I don't quite understand about that response is, you know, they are, and those projects can apply to us for, you know, sidewalk improvements and bike and ped improvements as part of that project.
It was attached to the highway, but not
but
it's actually, you know, offset 1,000 feet. If you offset and you want to get around that whole
area. Yeah, I don't.
Get along that way.
Yeah, I mean, other than the right-of-way, I mean, they could do it.
It'd be cheaper right-of-way to get it, you know, 500 feet
yeah.
away than actually right there at the
yeah.
highway. That's the most expensive.
I mean, I don't think there's any rule that we would say, if they came to us and said they wanted to do that we wouldn't try to fund that as a whole project. It would just have to be included in how much the project was going to cost. I mean, obviously, I guess there's like a rationale test of, you know, okay, if you're gonna go down a half mile, make a U, come back up a half mile, that's probably not a reasonable thing. But if you're doing some kind of loop around the highway or around a roundabout, that might be more reasonable. It would all, you know, be in the eye of the beholder a little bit. But there's no rule that says, you know, if your sidewalks are 500 feet from your road improvement, it's not. Part of this, it can't be part of the same project. So, I mean, unless I'm misinterpreting something about what they said.
No, you countered what they said, and I thought it was a little odd too. But
I mean, I would just be, and maybe, and I don't have a great visual of what, I haven't seen what the project design looks like. You know, and maybe what they're thinking is like, well, look, you know, if the right-of-way we're taking is here and you want to build a path that involves us, you know, hopping parcels and taking a line out somewhere, you know, outside of that project area, maybe they have a case. But if it was all part of sort of the same footprint with a plan, I don't know why that...
Well, there is four phases.
Yeah,
so
there
each phase is greater than to be funded. They're actually going to you for two phases.
Right.
So fun, too. So, you know, the project is a little larger than normal. It's mm-hmm. not just a 1 mile.
Right. Thing. Yeah.
We're talking about
it's a lot of roundabouts.
Yeah. 2.5 mile bicycle loop.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd have to almost look at the, now again, like, and probably what we're funding for them is partial. So I don't even know, you know, and there's a cap of $6 million. So there are limits to what we can and can't do, but you know, if they wanted to add, like, for example, Cleveland-Massillon Road and their application to widen it to 4 lane or 5 lanes included a multi-purpose trail, you know, that was offset and things like that. That, yeah, I mean, but those were all in that existing right-of-way that they were going to take. So, but I don't think it was probably, you know, 10 feet off the road, not 500 feet off the road. So, I don't know. To me, I would rather have them approach us to describe the project and what they want to do and have us tell them that, like, we can't fund that. Then,
well, so citizens that have to promote what we
right.
think is going to, you know,
yeah.
these engineers, they think they're limited to what they can look at, and if we see something that's different,
yeah,
they're going to write, say, first comment, well, we can't do that because it's never been done before, but at the same time, I've known Mr. Siggy, I mean, previous. But, I mean, anything we ask for, we seem to get.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's definitely a, I think we will always want to be helpful to the communities. If that's something that they want, we would try to figure out a way to make it work. And maybe that would mean they'd have to apply to us for the TAP program as well to get sidewalk, you know, to if they wanted additional funding. But I don't think there, other than that you'd have to have a, you know, a what is it called? I'm trying to think of the word, purpose and need and the limits. What's the phrase for the limits? You've got to have logical termini. That's the phrase I was looking for. So if you have, you know, logical termini and things make sense, to do it. But I don't know. I'd kind of have to see that project to say for sure, like, oh, yeah, that'd have to be a separate project. And I'm sure from an engineering perspective, you know, if you take the cost of the project, 10% of that is going to be, you're going to pay for your engineering that way. I mean, that's, you know, they're paying a lot of money to have that thing engineered, and I'm sure throwing additional stuff at it is not something that they really want to do. But sorry, I don't know if I really answered your question. But
yeah, you did. Actually.
That was the best I could do.
Actually, your answer is what I was expecting. It can be done.
It can be done, but you know, it'd be case by case for sure.
It's also subject to your grading process.
I mean, exactly.
A lot of projects
yeah.
there, and we I think one of those projects just got in there by a point.
Yeah, and we only had enough money to fund the right of way acquisition, not the construction. So Green's going to have to come back to us in 2 years to apply for the construction. So,
you bring up an interesting point with the circles. We talked about the roundabouts before. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a problem riding my bike through a roundabout that's fairly small, mm-hmm. like Smith Road. But Talmadge Circle, how would you handle that?
Well, I'll give you the traffic light. Talmadge Circle's not technically a roundabout. So
it works the same.
Yeah. that is like a, well, that in particular is such a different beast, right? I mean,
is that similar to what you're talking about with Green?
No. Okay. That roundabout is accident prone. What Green's putting in is gets rid of all accidents.
Yeah. Well, Green's doing multiple small in different areas as almost like a, I don't know, Joel, you might be able to, it's like different intersections are putting in small roundabouts at different areas.
Immediately south of the main exchange where all the commercial buildings is, they're actually putting four roundabouts in a square. Well, no, yeah, one block apart.
Okay, we're not in a square configuration.
Yeah. Here's the main expressway, and you've got this whole industrial thing that's being, we're going to have to put in 8 lanes if we want to have, you know, turn lanes and everything else, and they're putting the roundabouts in so that we can get away with about 5 or 6 lanes.
Is this south and west of the...
Yes, south and west, southwest of it.
The road going back to the Giant Eagle.
If there were small roundabouts, I don't have a problem, yeah. But something larger than that, how do you provide for... My big worry about going through a roundabout is you've got so much traffic coming that you've got, as a bicyclist, you have to get over to one of the lanes.
Right, they've got to see you and before you don't want them turning out in front of you.
And when it's a fairly small one, it's easy enough to do.
So. Right, right.
And if you had four together like that, I suppose you wouldn't have a...
Yeah, and I don't know with all four how many legs... Are there going to be four legs at each intersection? Like, will four streets go into each roundabout? Whereas, you know, in Talmadge, you've got eight legs plus curb cuts, which makes that particularly challenging. But, yeah, quite honestly, I mean, and we've talked a little bit about this internally, is trying to decide what bike and pedestrian safety when it comes to a roundabout. Like, we know it slows traffic down as they're going into the roundabout, but I don't think we've mastered even what's the best, you know, in Talmadge where they did the real roundabout on northwest, you know, there they would like to do a bike lane, but they think maybe it just needs to taper off right at the roundabout and have people cross at each neck, you know, and I don't, is that... You know, like, I don't, and I think that there's still a lot of confusion about, or do you send the bike lane almost, do you keep a bike lane in the roundabout on the outer or on the inner? You know, like, I don't think there's
ever been...
You can't
get to the inner without crossing the cross.
Right, exactly. You'd have to cross over.
The outer, you've got the problem of...
The cars turning in. Yeah, so...
I've not had a problem going through that one on Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Just because of...
It's not been very crowded.
Yeah. And in that case, it seems pretty easy. But if you have a rush hour one where you're, you know, I'm not sure what the best way is. And when we've talked to engineers or consultants and stuff, I don't feel like we've gotten a solid answer other than, well, it's better because it slows the traffic down. But other than that, where you send the bicyclist doesn't seem to have a...
I don't think I've seen anything in any of the bicycle stuff that I've had that shows that kind of situation.
Yeah. But the roundabout, when you do have a busy time... The traffic, it's, you know, you get universal traffic in one spot and few people injecting. Mm-hmm. So it's better for the bicycle. It's traveling at a little different speed because the intersection is not a stop.
Right, now you have a continuous movement.
The bicycle is much safer.
Right. Well, what they say, too, with bicycles is just the momentum issue. You know, you never want to stop because the effort that you take for the momentum is the... but yeah, so from that perspective, it seems like that. But there's so many things, you know, the topography of the way each road comes into the circle and, you know, sight lines and all that stuff. I'm sure each one functions a little bit differently. But so I don't have a good answer. All right. Any other questions on projects? On the projects 6B? So Joel, what we were going through was just all the funding recommendations. Yeah, and our TAC committee approved this this afternoon. It goes to policy next Thursday for approval. And if they do approve it, then these will officially be, you know, on the docket to be funded, the projects on this list. So.
And I was assured basically that essentially there's potential to put any planning. This is only a planning stage and right away. So
yeah, they haven't even
engineered. People can ask for anything they want.
Yeah, they haven't. From my understanding, I don't know if they've engineered it yet in Green, you know, or how much they've even developed that project at this point. I mean, I know the ideas are there and all that, but there's still a lot of steps once you have the, you know, to acquire the right of way to do the design and all that stuff that take place.
They've eliminated designs, let's put it this way. They've done preliminary engineering.
Enough to say what they're,
you know, four alternatives, this is going to be the best alternative.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. They haven't gone any further.
Is that far enough away from that interchange, though, so that if you're going northbound and that light at the ramp heading south on 77, there's enough distance between that? So when that light's red, it doesn't back traffic up onto the roundabout, first one they want to do?
That's a good question.
That's going to almost seem like it's going to cause more congestion because of that traffic light, unless they're going to do roundabouts at the ramps, which would be interesting.
that's what they're doing on Cleveland Massillon. That's the plan right now. Cleveland Massillon 77, the half interchange.
Half diamond, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They want to do roundabouts on the north and the south. And I think it's one of those things when you've got, you know, one predominant movement and then one, you know, it's like most people, I don't even know what it would be in that case, but, you know, you've got basically got a right and a left and people can continue to cycle through it as they get off the ramp. It'd be interesting. But I don't know, some communities have really taken roundabouts and others, you know, are still fighting the fight. And then there are others that absolutely hate them and refuse to put them in. We have all of those kinds in our region. So,
have you discussed the freight plan yet, or is that
nope?
That
nope. Nope. Yeah. That'll be well. We're going to hit bike plan first, and then the freight plan. So I'll turn it over to Krista on the bike plan. Right?
Yep. So I kind of wanted to use this, and I guess, you know, kind of since we have a smaller group, depending on like kind of what items you think are more or less important or want to discuss. Use this as a kind of a brainstorming session. So we're just starting to think about the bike plan and what we want to do and what kind of analysis. And so that's kind of where we are. I mean, I think, you know, the purpose is pretty well established as far as, you know, we need it for AMAX to really work with the communities and everyone to set, you know, what are those regional priorities that we can then put into the plan that can get, you know, eligible for funding. And so I think, you know, making the case, what kind of planning have we done, and figuring out what those priorities are, and then also, you know, really trying to set the tone and help communities, you know, here are the types of things that we think should be doing, you know, here's successes, here's what you can be doing to help push biking in your community. So I think that, you know, from our perspective, that's really the goal of what we're trying to do. And then the last bike plan, I don't know if you recall, you know, it was the first time we really had looked at on-road. So previously it was all trail. And in the last one, we had regional trail recommendations. We also had these on-road priorities, which ended up being a huge list. I think there were about 35 to 40 regional, you know, a lot of state routes, a lot of your major roads, you know, markets, exchanges, you know, 43 in Kent. And it was almost too many. And so I think this time we're really trying to look at, you know, what, who are we planning to bike for? Who are we trying to get, you know, on the road? And kind of what we're trying to get out of that. And then, you know, as far as like how that makes the plan. So one thing that I've been looking at quite a bit, if you look on the back of that handout, it's called the four types of cyclists. I found pretty interesting. Sorry, there's an extra handout over there. I don't know if everyone gets that. On the back of it, I think it's been about 10 years. Roger Geller, who was a bike coordinator in Portland, came up with this system of looking, you know, doing surveys. And it's been revalidated in 2012 through the University of Portland for all of that. And I believe there's a national study out now. But a lot of different communities have kind of used this overall framework for how they do their planning. And I think that's a way that I would like to go. So it looks at, he categorizes four types of cyclists. And the first is the strong and the fearless. And that's people that will ride as a vehicle with traffic in any situation.
Is that you, Fred?
Probably not completely. I'm sort of between one and two.
Okay.
I used to be.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah, you used to
be.
You retired.
So looking at, you know, that person, and I think in certain communities maybe it's 1%, 2 or 3, but it's a very small percent are your, you know, strong and fearless. And they'll, you know, they don't really need a whole lot, or they feel comfortable. And then you have your enthused and confident, which is, you know, I think like that 5 to 7 range. You know, and those are people that they're comfortable on the road with vehicles, but they would prefer a facility. They prefer a bike lane or a wide shoulder or even a protected lane. But that's still a relatively small percent. And then you have the interested but concerned, and this is the majority of people. And out of all of these, it's not out of cyclists, it's out of like the whole population. So you know, those are people that, you know, maybe they ride twice a year for recreation and they say, yes, maybe I would like to do more or less. But those are the people that are the majority, and they will only ride in a completely separated lane. You know, whether that's a trail or like a separated bike path along the road, but, you know, out of the roadway, completely separated. And then you have about 30% that, you know, no matter what you do, like, they're not going to, whether it's their, you know, physically unable to because of, you know, age or disability, or, you know, they just have zero interest. So when we're thinking about, like, what types of facilities we want to fund, you know, that kind of interested but concerned group is really, like, if we're going to increase biking for our area, like, that's who you're targeting. You know, you've got people already, for the most part, you know, those first two groups are already, you know, pretty well going to ride. But, like, if we're really going to increase, you know, people biking in the MS area, it's that 60% group that who you're targeting. And, you know, across the board, that's the group that really, like, you know, sharrows aren't going to make a difference to. You know, bike lanes, maybe you'll get a few of them, but, you know, really they're looking at those kind of, like, side paths or a protected bike lane. You know, some sort of barrier, whether it's cars or a curb. So in thinking about that, you know, as far as, like, what kinds of, you know, when we want to, like, what kind of road, on-road and trail projects we want to fund, I think, you know, if we're serious, you know, as our mayors and community of, you know, really increasing biking, you know, I think, like, we've got to really, how does that affect what kind of facilities we want to recommend? So I think that's a thing that I've been thinking about quite a bit. So I would love to get your take on that. And then I guess just in general, two other things. You know, I think we have a pretty good handle on trails as far as, you know, what are the metro parks really doing as far as land acquisition and kind of the ways that they're working on some of those connector trails or extending to, like, the headwaters outside of Manaway. But, you know, for the on-road, I think, you know, looking at, you know, how do we prioritize those? And what kinds of facilities we want to do. That's still, I think, the large kind of question of how we want to handle that. And, you know, what do we want to fund and recommend as a region? And then I think, you know, just other ways of how do we want to promote, how do we want to get more feedback. I thought, you know, since we have this meeting and already have people that, you know, or know what kind of we've been doing and that kind of thing, it'd be a good idea just to kind of generally brainstorm on, you know, do you have things that we should, shouldn't look at, you think will work, not. And then kind of from there, I would go back and kind of craft, you know, a more of a detailed strategy and start working on a draft. So I'll quit rambling, and anyone has ideas or thoughts?
Two things I'd like to, I would suggest that you break this up into your one and two class. For one class, you're not going to do anything for them.
Yeah, I think you ignore that.
Road someplace,
yeah.
They're going to go do it. So I would worry about those. But the two class is probably where you're going to get people that are going to do commuting. So if you want to look at the areas, how you're going to increase commuting, then you really have to do things for that class, and you have to find a way to move some people from third class up to second class. So the third class is basically people that are going to be recreational users only, and are going to ride when the weather's good. So they're going to ride from May through September, and that's it. I think in this first and second class, you're going to find people that will ride much more of the year, you know, like I do from March through November if the weather doesn't get too bad in November. But I don't ride in the really bad weather.
Yeah.
But you're going to find people, if you want to be commuting, you've got to be able to do things there. So I would look at, I guess I would look at some things where you can try and connect off the road with on-road facilities where you've got a good marked lane, and you've got things where a bicyclist know there's a marked path there, the drivers know there's a marked route for them, and they're going to be more comfortable with them on a two-lane road with no berm.
Well, you kind of bring up, I think, an interesting point or something that we find ourselves trapped into a little bit is sort of the system as viewed by a recreational user and the system as viewed by a potential commuter. And, like, you know, for us, you then, it typically always breaks down as, okay, well, you build trails for the recreational and you build bike lanes for the commuter. But I think you bring up a good point because, you know, it's like if our main goal is to increase commuting, we need to focus on that 7% and growing the second percent. If our main goal is getting more people to ride bikes for any reason, then our goal should be to build for that 60%, essentially. So I think that's kind of an interesting philosophy that you bring up, where it's like, if we're really trying to increase the number of people that are riding to work or riding 9 months out of the year or whatever, we should, you know, focus on building facilities that will encourage those users.
Right.
But I do think, too, though, like, to grow that, yeah, you need those 60 percenters to come into the fold to grow. I mean, really, to grow that 7%, it's got to come from the people that right now see themselves only as recreational riders. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's one of the real roles, probably, of people like the Akron Bike Club. Mm-hmm. Is where we start out with somebody and they come the first time and we go on relatively not busy stuff, mm-hmm. or they'll ride the towpath. If they ride a couple of times, they'll start to feel more comfortable.
Right.
If they ride regularly, they'll start to feel more comfortable, and they'll move out to the streets. Mm-hmm. There's an outfit down in Columbus, a bike club, I can't recall the name of it, that aims at doing that. They go out and recruit people to come, and they ride in a group, but they refuse, they make them ride on the streets to become comfortable with them. And if we had enough of the recreational people really getting interested, I think you could do that kind of a training thing too. Mm-hmm. Teach them, mm-hmm. go out with them, let them ride with you, learn how to be comfortable.
Well, and I feel like that's what Bike and Brainstorms did for me. Like, I did them enough times where when I finally decided I was going to ride into work one day, I felt comfortable because I'd done it in a group enough times where, you know, and so I do think there's a lot of truth to that, of that you feel very safe when, even with four bikes together.
Right.
You know, it doesn't take many bikes to feel like you're a car almost, and then you kind of get that confidence, and mm-hmm. it makes it a lot easier over time.
I thought it was interesting. I think Cuyahoga Falls, I know they applied, one of the projects for TAP was they applied for, like, that side path, which, you know, was just an avenue, like, you know, functions more of almost like a trail alongside the road, like a fully separate on Wyoga Lake. And it sounded like, you know, that was kind of the thing that they were going to be trying to do a lot more of through the community. And I think, you know, that kind of thing really does, you know, that targets your 60%. And, you know, maybe there are gaps, you know, you have to ride on the road some, but, you know, that gets people potentially being a commuter, but they're off the road.
They'll do more of it, yes.
Yeah. So, but I think they're the only community I'm aware of in our area, or even in the region, that really is looking at, like, that kind of model.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know when, you know, Jason was lucky enough to take that trip to Copenhagen, mm-hmm. and, you know, one of the things that the Danes were saying was that they build everything to be separated, because by far, you know, you're going to get the girl on the bike with the dress, like, in going to work, on a separated, you know, no matter what, it's got to be protected. And that was sort of their philosophy, was like, go big or go home, sort of thing, which I thought was sort of interesting. And, you know, they actually have almost a 50% mode split.
I think they were saying it was, I mean, I read a couple of their reports, but I mean, it was primarily because they were going after that, you know, that middle group. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, that's where I think for us, it's like, I don't think we're quite there, you know, financially or with, like, the political will or commitment to do that. You know, take a lane on Market Street and make it purely.
But if you had 50% of your traffic being bicycles, you would
then
do
you,
that.
Yeah.
So once you do get a big enough group for that, mm-hmm.
yeah.
I think it does justify mm-hmm. doing separate.
Right, so. Right.
So that's where, like, in my mind, I'm thinking it's like, you know, if we as a region are really going to try to push this, we have to be very intentional about who we're trying to get and what we're, you know, what we're trying to build to do that. And I think this plan, I'd like to flesh that out more so that, you know, with our very limited funding and what we're talking to, you know, the elected officials about, is this is, you know, what you really should be planning. I think that's tricky. Or we're just scratching the surface, so.
Well, think about that. If you were a recreational rider and you mm-hmm. just wanted to ride for recreation, right now what you do is you go to the towpath or mm-hmm. The bike and hike areas where there's some scenery, things to see. Mm-hmm. But if you expand that so that the beginning and ending of those trails, for instance, the Freedom Trail, mm-hmm. if you got that going through areas where people would think about commuting, like down the Akron, Utah,
yeah.
mm-hmm. Talmadge, then they get used to riding, and I think that mm-hmm. becomes a chance to move in the more, whatever, develop differently.
Well, and similar to transit, with bike lanes and bike facilities, is we're a long way from having those last miles. You know, even if you get a good 2 mile whatever, mm-hmm. most likely if you're going to take that challenge anywhere on road, you're going to end up at a place that doesn't have a protected lane. You know, at some point in your journey, you'll end, mm-hmm. you'll hit the spot that you've got to just go on road, which I think is, you know, more fodder for thought in terms of, you know, if you've got a 2 mile stretch that's protected, can you pull enough people on that? Will those people start on that protected stretch and then be like, ah, hell, I'm just going to keep going, you know, even though the protected lane ends, or are they going to stop and turn around and go back?
The people that might have that statistic for you is Metro Parks, some mm-hmm. of the Metro Parks, because the bike and hike trail from Bruce Park goes down into Silver mm-hmm. Springs, Silver Lakes.
Yeah, and that's
and it
all.
It cuts through on streets mm-hmm. and then connects up again and goes on.
Yeah, you know, I've never asked if they count that portion. You know,
or if they're doing bike patrol, it was counted, remember where you were at.
Yeah.
So if you saw somebody that was a biker, you counted if he was on, if you were on a trail, even if it was on Silver Lakes Boulevard or whatever.
We should do that, is just find out. I mean, and those are pretty low traffic streets, but still, it's different than riding on the protected trail.
But they're planning on taking that up in the next couple of years. They're mm-hmm. planning to replace all of that with the trails.
Yeah.
So, but it has been there for 10 years that I know of.
Yeah.
So. The other thing to encourage riding the places that are biking at the end of a place where they would drive to work, but then internally they drive around, bike around. I'm thinking like the Kent State University campus. And at some places you have a bunch of real bikes that they make available to everyone, mm-hmm. but they paint it like a really weird color so nobody wants to see it.
I think Kent just started that, didn't they? I think they just started their bike share program where, they've got the stations around campus. So mm-hmm. if you were a commuter, you could park and then you could ride, you know, between buildings and all that kind of stuff.
That was 10 years ago.
Huh? Yeah, no kidding.
Theoretically, Andy Davis was going to do that at the U of A, too.
Yeah. And I think they're having a hard time. It has to be subsidized, I think, in this area so far. You know, there have been some places where it doesn't have to be subsidized and they make money off of it, but the size, yeah, but that's New York and, you know, that type
of... Even New York doesn't do that. That's very limited areas that does.
Yeah. So... But I do think Crystal brings up a good point, and one that we're constantly struggling with our members is, you know, trails, bike lanes, spread it out to both, you know, more, it's just, it becomes sort of, you know, there's a push, I think, on both sides to see more of the different types, and, you know, it's a challenge for us to figure out what that right mix is and what we really should be pushing, because if a community is not doing anything, and we can get them to put in a bike lane somewhere where we think it's necessary, that's probably better than nothing, you know, but the preferred might be to have that protected lane, so it's, you know, which of course then it raises the cost, and, you know, and it's like for us, I think, as staff, trying to figure out, you know, where the most efficient use is going to promote the most ridership for the least amount of dollars, almost, you know, and if we do have... And if it is going to take that large investment of separated lanes, then we need to commit to it. Or if we think we can get away with, you know, bike lanes and sharrows and things, then we need to commit to that. And not, you know, not kind of be throwing things against the wall in every direction sort of thing.
Hudson would be a good example of that because you've got the bike and hike trail coming too.
Mm-hmm.
And if, once they put in the bike lane on the 303 mm-hmm. and make it much easier to go from the bike and hike trail around the 1st and Main
mm-hmm.
and then back again. And if you do the balance trail, I think that's going to come the other way and hit the bike and hike trail too.
Yeah.
So, and those are situations where once you got that, I would think your neighborhood people would be willing to more ride
mm-hmm.
because it is fairly well protected. It is.
Yeah.
Thoughts on, like, how much, you know, coming to talk to, like, ABC or different groups or having kind of, you know, getting more input on what types of facilities people want. as far as like, should we, you know, kind of come up with what we think your recommendations come out, or, you know, should we do more, not like focus groups, but, you know, try to get like more input on what, I guess, you know, I don't want to come back with a plan that's not representative of what, you know, people that are already riding would like to see more of. But I think there's that, you know, trying to find what the best way to do that is.
I think if you talk to the bike groups about commuting, mm-hmm. that would be a good opportunity. But I think if you want to talk to the vast majority of the recreational people, I don't know any place where you're going to find a group
mm-hmm.
that really aims and has those kind of
yeah.
people. And it would be good if we had that. Maybe you can start getting up with putting together a group that, or maybe the Friday night ride that comes out
mm-hmm.
of Canal Park might be a good place there, because that draws a lot of people, and I don't know that a lot of those are anything but recreational
riders. Cool.
Hopefully we can do some outreach when it gets a little warmer, too.
I know.
People will be excited to talk about biking, because it's not...
It's a time to do that, because in the spring.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Really
right.
So hopefully we'll, yeah. Cool, well, thanks. If you have any other thoughts, I just wanted to try to get some...
I know this is 4 years ago, but... when I was a bicyclist, active bicyclist, and I obviously went to Ohio State University, but then I came back to Akron U. My dad was a contractor, and I had to take over the business part of the time, so it took me 8 years to get through my college degree. But to take some minor courses, it was more convenient for me to go to Oroville, 18 miles on back roads, than to come to Akron U, 12 miles. It just was the pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mind the extra distance because
right.
it was pleasurable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we can get these, we know we have to be on the road some of the time, but there's a certain stress when you're on the road versus
mm-hmm.
if you're even 10 feet off that road.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got to be an expert at preventing collisions because people wouldn't see you ever.
Yeah.
And I was a 40-mile-an-hour bicyclist. I wasn't no 10-mile or 15-mile guy. So I mean, I was going the same speed as the vehicles, so you can learn how to prevent accidents, but still, it is a stressful situation. So I guess I just would like to see them, if we can get any separation at all,
mm-hmm.
at least for a part of the trip,
mm-hmm.
it is so much more valuable. Now, I don't think things have changed that much in 40 years.
That bike's probably gotten lighter.
Oh, I don't like
too much. But I think you're seeing more situations where you've got marked bike lanes and more signs saying shared road
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And I think that makes people...
The drivers make more... it's making those drivers aware of you.
Right, which
right.
is why you put signs in. Because you'll tell them know that there are bicyclists.
So that's been one major change, yes.
And if you have these roads marked... State Road being a good one, where they've got the new markings down, where they've got lines so that it separates a right
mm-hmm.
turn lane from the regular road. And I think people recognize those, or as they see them and see enough of that, they'll recognize that enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the bicyclist should realize that that's going to make them more comfortable. But you're right, it takes a little bit of confidence to get on the road. Right.
The roads are more complete streets format. Than
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to roll on a bicycle simply because of that.
Second thing I want to bring up, and this is related to your next subject, is with the freight, is that in Potomac County, Portage, we have a lot of canalways that have been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of trolleyways that have been abandoned. And I think these need to be, I've seen some of these things in the past, but they need to be brought back out, an inventory of these, so that a community can say, well, we do have this here, we can take this as a 2-mile stretch through our city and then tie the road things into it to get that, I want to say, the pleasurable experience, because half the cost of these things is the right-of-way acquisition. I mean, we have gas lines. The gas people have to maintain it. Hey, if there's a bicycle trip there's other people maintaining it also. So we've got gas right-of-ways, high-pressure gas right-of-ways, we have old trolley lines, the old canalways that are not all built back onto, and they're still are partially there, that are going
mm-hmm.
would be cheap alternatives, and sometimes crisscrossing some of our highways is shortcuts. you might get someplace quicker on a bicycle. I mean, I could get on a bicycle from my house to here quicker to Akron-U than in a car.
Yeah.
We did map out the streetcar lines
I've
for the old
it,
trolley
I,
car,
not
but we haven't
20 years.
Figured out quite what to. But it is; those do have a lot of the excess right of way.
And I think one of the issues too, though, is that that right of way is always owned by somebody. You know,
it's not being used.
It's not being used.
Therefore, it's not valuable.
But it's owned, and the minute these communities do come in and ask to use it, that value all of a sudden it comes out of thin air. I mean, it actually
you're not paying $100 a square foot, but you are on the right of ways on the regular road.
But a great example of this is, you know, in Lakemoor Springfield, they had there's an old trolley line, goes from the high school all the way up to Springfield Lake and the Springfield Township Center, the community center, right?
Green Giant.
Yeah, one of the properties in the Lakemoor neighborhood bought the adjacent easement, or bought the adjacent right-of-way that all of a sudden, so there's a piece of that easement that looks so simple and so easy to get through is owned by a property owner. And if they don't just get a flat-out no, they ask for, you know, $150,000 for a, you know, a 20 by, or a 10 by 50 piece of land. And that's, you know, so it's like there's things like that in all of these where they've actually sold, you know, the when the railroad left or somebody sold the rights to the property owners that were adjacent and all this. Mm-hmm. And in some of those places, it's like some of those, the only thing I'll say is that some of those those alignments are fool's gold because it turns out it's actually owned by 100 different people on all the different parcels all the way up the... and that's almost why you haven't seen stuff done. Now, that's not everyone. There are still some out there.
But if the city or the township made it a plan, a 10 or 15-year plan,
mm-hmm.
10 or 15 years later, you know, none of those properties are going to change hands that the city can act or townships
right.
can acquire
right.
those at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, if it's in their zoning and planning and the people can't use it for anything else.
The all the trail plans that I have been involved in it's and been a part of, it's really amazing how all it takes is one property owner to say no, you know, and it is a challenge. I mean, Hudson was dealing with that with the Veterans Trail. They actually had to change the alignment because they couldn't get one parcel to give them 10 feet.
The state of Ohio law is you cannot prevent someone from traveling through your property.
But you can.
If somebody travels through your property, you cannot be targeted.
But I think you can prevent them from building a sidewalk on your property.
Correct.
Or a trail. So they.
But you can still go through it. You can walk through it, right through it. You don't mind going through the mud.
Yes. That would be an interesting trail to see.
Having that break would really impede the effectiveness of the trail.
But do we want to go on to freight?
Yeah,
make that jump at least from.
I only wanted to bring that.
It's an interesting, and I mean it's been interesting how many trail projects we've worked on so far the last couple of years that you start off with what looks like a clean alignment, and you know you see the old rail, the trail, and they all come with these weird little wrinkles that make it not quite as easy as...
Is there a summary of all these easements? The old
I don't think there's one. I don't think there's one, you know, between gas, rail, and sewer and all that. I don't think we've got one map that would show them all. But we that's something that we can definitely work to put together. I mean, I think you're right. It would be helpful to see... I mean, there'd probably
be a heck
of a lot
is there's not construction usually
right,
in these easements.
Right, right.
Step one,
mm-hmm.
nothing's been built there,
mm-hmm.
so there's no tear down cost.
Right.
There's no capital expenditure to pay. Well, I got this property, I've been building this, worth so much, and you're going to tear it down.
Yeah.
So it is raw land.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where
it's green
kind of
field.
Artificial
than, yeah.
Inflated, but that's.
Well, yeah, that's. And that's just going on the experience we've had the last few years. But like, I'm sure there are corridors that we can utilize that we aren't. But on to freight, onward and upward to freight, Jeff?
Freight. We have a freight plan right now. It was approved in December of 2012.
were responsible for incorporating freight into the transportation planning process for economic development purposes and for congestion and maintenance purposes. We have a number of areas that we have to consider as part of freight, the highway system and its maintenance, bridges, those all affect the movement of freight on the highway system, as well as rail. We don't have any port facilities, but we do have airports. So we need to try to integrate the different systems that we have that transport freight. And we have to consider safety, congestion, and trying to integrate those modes that move freight for the area. So we have to come up with a plan. We have a number of concerns. Some of those concerns that were mentioned in the previous plan have been addressed. At-grade crossings are a big concern in terms of safety and congestion. Traffic has to stop for the train. Accidents can happen. So you try to remove that by separating the grade with the bridge over the road, or the road goes over the rail. So issues like that we try to address.
And one of the things that we talked about or brought up at TAC that I brought up was, like, if you've read the articles in Hudson about the Norfolk Southern train stops at Hines Hill and blocks the road. And actually, Tom Sheridan was telling us, the engineer from Hudson, is that when there's an emergency call on the west side of the train tracks in Hudson, they actually end up sending four ambulances get sent out. Like, one that'll take the Boston Mills route south, one that'll go the Hines Hill route, and then the Valley Boston Heights will send from the other side. Because they don't know, you know, there's no certainty that the road's clear. So that's an interesting freight issue that I think we're going to at least discuss and address, but you're kind of looking for ideas of, are there other ones that people can think of that our members are having trouble with, you know. Not so much like the sound zone things, that's not really what we're looking for, but ones where we're definitely, you know, either freight's impeding traffic or traffic's impeding freight and there's conflicts. The best way to do that is to eliminate them.
Broad Street and Route 8.
Yeah.
That and Hines Hill are the two that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Broad's that's a tough nut to crack, just in general, that whole, everything that's going on there. And even though it's separated at the Howe interchange in Route 8, the fact that the railroad's right there creates just, it's a mess of interchange is another issue. But, you know, and then we, you know, freight's sort of interesting because, you know, there's sort of the underlying assumption, like, well, if we fix something on the road, then we fix it for the freight, because the trucks, you know, if we improve it for everybody, the trucks benefit just as much as everybody else. But we had a meeting with ODOT and FHWA today, and they were kind of saying that, you know, that's really not enough. Like, you should think more about, you know, specifically freight and freight carriers and, you know, how they're impacted by certain things. And so it's just, you know, it's different ways to look at it that we're just trying to get our, you know, get our feet wet on this year. But, you know, we can't get, you can reach out to a number of trucking agencies, you won't get a callback or any kind of feedback. And you don't blame them. I mean, but, you know, it's like, well, what do you, like, you want me to tell you about a 2040 plan? Like,
one of the other issues in terms of safety is, would be geometrics, which ODOT's kind of addressing along 76. You know, you have trucks flip over because the ramps are too tight. They're going too fast. At the central interchange, they're going to build a new ramp over the top of Route 77. So if you're on 76 heading west and you want to go on 77 south, there at the central interchange, a lot of trucks flip there. So they're going to build a new bridge.
That's not going to happen.
I want to say it's not for another four years or something.
Yeah, they received, they're starting some work on the central interchange starting, I believe, in 2018. I don't even know if we've got an official word from TRAC about that.
What's that?
That would be later. Mm-hmm. So I mean, some of these other improvements would be later.
Yeah.
The things they're working on now, like the Main Street Broadway.
Main Broad,
that would help.
But they're going to do one that, you know, when you're coming east on 76, they're going to change the braiding of the ramps so that you're coming in on the opposite side. You know, so I can't even remember what it is, but we've actually been going to meetings about it, and looks like they were able to acquire funding from TRAC to actually do it, but it's still out a couple of years.
Have they ever considered possibly, speaking of the Kenmore Lake, just getting rid of the Kenmore Lake, putting 76 on 224, or it's 277, just running up 77 stretch between the Central and 224, because that would save so much money in rebuilding all these interchanges if they just realign the interstate.
I think the biggest issue is that there's still a ton of traffic on the Kenmore Lake that would have to go somewhere, and I think when you shift it all over to 77,
that would destroy the congestion and
the amounts that you would have to widen.
I think that's the biggest, busiest segment in the entire AMATS area.
Like they were showing in some of the preliminary engineering stuff I've seen is that the highway capacity manual says that between 277 and the Central Interchange that you need, I can't remember what it is, 5 lanes on each side for now. If you were gonna build it to highway capacity standards, it would require 5 lanes in each direction. So if you eliminated the Kenmore leg, I can't even imagine what
77 would have to be.
Yeah. You have to add a lot more capacity. And then you're talking about even higher costs. So I think what they're trying to do is a lot of braiding and ramp changing in order to avoid doing mass widenings, you know. And Kenmore, they are really considering making that 3 lanes that is the detour. The 3 lanes are 2 lanes on Kenmore that they're turning to 3 temporarily. There's some talk about could you do the hard shoulder running and keep it 3 lanes permanently. To add capacity without extending the roadway, because it's a pretty tight fit in there. So,
are you going to be looking for places that you have, for instance, truck traffic now that's on narrow roads?
It's funny. We had a couple comments about that. I think, you know, we'll look at like traffic mix, and then one of the things one of our members requested was looking at where all the truck routes are right now and where technically trucks are allowed to travel and not travel, because I know like Hudson has truck routes and Cuyahoga Falls has truck routes, and they wanted us to look at possibly mapping those things, but I think if someone gave a location, it would be interesting for us to look at that. If it's something that has a higher mix of trucks than most roads and it's a narrow road, that would be something that I think would be valuable for us to, you know, almost do a spot improvement at.
I can think of a few right off the bat.
Really?
303 coming down from Route 8, from State Road, down across to 271. You have trucks that go through there and go through Peninsula.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you also have on State Road going from Steele's Corner, either way, going north or south, partly up to Route 8 or to, mostly to Route 8.
May I have your attention, please? And the library will close in 20 minutes.
The other one is
Please
Caesar's
make
Road.
Final selections now.
Yeah.
And Thank that's you. Going to be getting even worse as they ever develop the area around Seasons and State. Mm-hmm.
Well, and you've seen the, by the interchange, right, the new warehouse that's going up by the... Yes.
That's going to really make that an extremely congested area in Russia. Mm-hmm. It is now. They've talked about it. It hasn't gotten.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's happening anymore.
Well, they're fighting about the old West Reserve now.
So. Yeah. Well, and I think with the Steele's Corners, Akron General, and the Cleveland Clinic and Twinsburg, I think it pinched that location too much for the competition to look at putting one there. That's what I kind of got the sense. But yeah, a few years ago, that was the whole argument that was made. And Jeff, I think you worked on some of those numbers originally to say we should put that interchange in the first place. Was all these jobs, and you know, those haven't and I don't think ever will materialize, the type of jobs that they were talking about that would necessitate.
That may happen when they get the sewer and the water in.
Well, yeah, you might be right. Yeah.
Boston Township.
Yeah. Any other issues?
Is there going to be any interconnection with freight and possibly high-speed transit? Any consideration?
As in the passenger high-speed
yes.
transit? I don't think in...
Or that plan all of it abandoned?
Well...
For this area, at least.
It's. I think it's... You know, they've been taught... They are looking to actually reactivate some of the line that we originally looked at for freight. The area around Specialty Metals, Seasons Road, and the CAC rail line. You know, the original thought was to take it up that rail line, and now it looks like they're trying to reactivate that for freight rail. And there just doesn't seem, with the funding environment that we're talking about, there's not a lot of political will to build anything that would be equivalent to a high-speed rail right now. I mean, there's just, it's not, the funding's not there for it, so.
What about light rail?
I think we have a better chance with a BRT type system than we do with light rail. The amount of investment that's required, you know, is just, there's not enough political will to want to make that kind of investment, or at least that's the way it kind of seems right now.
New mayor.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, I know Metro's tried for years just to get like preemptive signals on Market Street and have had very little luck. You know, it's all about perspective and what they want to do. But
you got a good planning director now, though.
Yeah, I heard some jerk took that position. Yeah, and we're really excited about that, too, because I do think that there was sort of a void there that he's going to do a great job of filling for the city. So I know we're looking forward to working with him in that capacity, which is exciting. Any other questions, concerns, or we can kind of wrap up? So appreciate you guys coming out and... Hopefully this was at least somewhat informative, and we appreciate the feedback, especially on the bike stuff. It looks helpful.